Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
You know your business better than anyone. So when you need finance to grow, you deserve a lender who understands too. Responsible finance providers look at the whole picture, the story behind the numbers, your plan and what you want to achieve. Our fair, flexible finance, decided by real people, not a computer, helps thousands of businesses every year. Find out more at findingfinance.org.uk. Finding Finance is a trading style of the Community Development Finance Association, which is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. A regulated credit broker and not a lender. We provide information only in respect of community development finance institutions and other finance providers, which may be available to you from our approved panel of lenders. Finding Finance. .org.uk.
Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082.
Hello, good evening. Here we are again. It's Deserted Island Discs. It's the radio show where we get people in the South Yorkshire area to come and talk about their life and pick some songs to take us through the evening for the next hour. I've run out of Irish people. We've gone on left, but we're on to second and third generation, so I'm very honoured tonight. We've got an actual Sheffield legend in Sean Dowen. Hello, Sean, how are you doing?
Hiya, all right, Ben, thanks.
Thanks for coming on the show. So, yeah, we're going to have a great hour. It's going to go quick. We're going to try and get your life in. We've been chatting on the way here and stuff, and there's so much to talk about.
Yeah.
But, Sean, I mean, just for people who don't know, I mean, you are one of the Mr. Sheffield legends, aren't you? You've been around for a long time and played big stages, big bands.
I mean, obviously, a lot of people will know me from being in Everly Pregnant Brothers.
Yeah.
I did that for 14 years. So that's how a lot of people know me. But then some will know me through having been a funeral director and having looked after families.
Yeah.
Some will know me from my comedy. Some will know me from when we were younger, bands I were in before.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've been around.
I didn't mean to laugh at the funeral director bit, but it is funny seeing you in that juxtaposed position, isn't it?
It's weird. And often I'll get people that will come up and say hello and they'll be like, hey, up, Sean, you all right?
Yeah.
And at first, it was weird at first. I used to have to think, now, how do I know you? Is it from Brothers or is it from a funeral?
Yeah.
And more often than not, it were both.
Yeah.
Because they'd seen Brothers and then I'd knock on the door to arrange a funeral and they'd be like, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
I'm your funeral director.
That'd be crazy.
And that were the thing is, that used to really help because straight away they saw me, oh, it's Big Sean.
Yeah.
We love Big Sean.
Yeah.
And it put them at ease.
Yeah.
So they'd
big friendly face and
Yeah, exactly. And it made arrangements just so much easier to do.
Yeah.
Although I remember going to one family. And we were half an hour talking about Toby Foster before we... I had to say to him,
I'm working.
You know, Dad's funeral.
Yeah. He gets everywhere, doesn't he? We go through your life, but let's start at the beginning, Sean. So tell us a bit about where you grew up, what it was like.
So I was born in 1969, 13th of February, in Jessop's Hospital. There were 3 foot of snow on the floor.
Yeah.
My mum and dad were living at the time at my nan and granddad's house in Beighton.
Yeah.
Saving up for their own place. My dad had to get on the phone. I was born at 8:40. My dad had to wait until Beighton Club were open, because that was the only phone number he'd got. And he had to ring Club when it opened and get a message, get somebody to go round to my nan's and tell my granddad and my nan and that I'd been born. my first almost a year of my life, we lived in Beighton.
Yeah.
And then my mum and dad got a
Is that, is that your nan's house?
Got my nan and granddad on my mum's side. And
Every time you say that, I keep thinking of that No Oven, No Pie, innit? I mean, nan's kitchen in Beighton.
Yeah, a lot of people go, what are you on about, nanan? What's a nanan? And I'm like, it's your gran, your nanny, whatever you call her.
No.
We call her nanan.
Yeah.
But, first year of my life, I grew up there, but by the time we moved to Wackenthorpe, my mum were already...
Which is not far away, is it, for people who don't know?
Oh, mile and a half.
Yeah, yeah.
We moved up to Wackenthorpe to Burley Spa Lane, and I were already walking. I were already toddling about,
yeah.
And I weren't a year old.
Yeah.
And there's only 14 months between me and my brother and sister. They're twins.
Yeah.
So we literally moved in.
A handful.
Moved into Wackenthorpe, and then twins were born.
Yeah.
So my mother, at 23 year old, had got three kids under two.
Yeah, yeah.
Which were a bit of an issue. So yeah. I spent a lot of time with my nan and granddad.
Yeah.
Just to help me, just to give my mum a bit of a break.
Yeah.
But so although we did live in Ackenthorpe, and I went to school first in Ackenthorpe. I've always been a Baiton lad.
Yeah, yeah. So you just go back to your nan.
That's my roots, is Baiton.
Yeah, yeah.
Which at that time were just a little isolated pit village.
Yeah.
That were near to Ackenthorpe, near to Woodhouse, near to Mosborough.
Yeah.
But we're on its own.
It is a place on its own, Baiton, isn't it? It's and they've still got the that mentality. Yeah. I mean, I suppose that the pit closure and stuff behind there.
So after miner strike and pit closures, it had started getting expanded. So there were new estates coming up.
Savall
Estate, and all up there, and out and Waterthorpe and all there. So, and they moved a lot of people out to them areas that had come from, like, East End of Sheffield, where they were knocking stuff down, from, like, Central Sheffield, where they were knocking slums down.
Yeah, yeah.
They moved them out there. So all of a sudden, we went from being this little village where there were about six families that were all related.
Yeah.
And you would... No matter who you were, at some point you were distantly related to one of them six families, if not more.
Yeah.
So, and you'd find, you know, years later, you'd find that things like one of me nanan's cousins, or my granddad's cousins, can't remember which, and we knew him when we were kids, and we always referred to him as Uncle Bade.
Yeah.
And he were related by, he were a cousin. And then in later years, recently, I found out that there's a band, old fellas from around that area, called Past Masters.
Yeah.
And they're really good. They play old 60s stuff and they're brilliant. Well, two of the lads in that band, they talked about Uncle Bade. And I said, oh, where's Uncle Bade? And you think, and he said, Bade's not a...
Yeah, it's not that common, is it?
Not a common name.
Yeah.
And it turns out...
You're related.
We're related.
Yeah.
Through marriage and being cousins.
Yeah.
And you don't, but this is it, you never find out. But as I say, it changed, dynamic changed. And so now there's a lot more people that have moved in.
Yeah.
Which has diluted that old fashioned Baiton thing. But I think it's made it a
it's
change
not a bad
for
thing,
better.
Is it? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, it's one of them places where there's lots of Union Jacks and St. George's flags flying, which disappoints me because it were a, you know, we went through miners' strike and we hated Tories and we hated Thatcher, and now there's folks behaving as though she were an hero and all that right wing stuff is what working man should be doing and hitting.
But, yeah, no, it gets everywhere, doesn't it? So what was like school days like then for you, Sean?
Early days up at Ackenthorpe, brilliant.
Yeah.
Took to school like a duck to water.
You're saying that you were reading at early age, and
my dad came home from work one day. I weren't even three at the time. I was just about to turn three. My dad came home from work. I'm sat around playing with something, and my dad walked in, and I said, "Dad," pointed to a jar of jam on cut on side, and I said, "Dad, jar of jam, Chivers jam." He says, "Maureen, have you told him that?" She says, "I ain't told him."
Yeah.
He says, "Sean, what does that say?" And I think it might have been something like cornflakes.
Yeah.
And he went, "He can read."
Yeah.
So, of course, he got me to the library. Because my dad's always been a big reader.
Yeah.
Took me down to Wackenthorpe Library. Persuaded him to let me have two library tickets. And I started reading.
What age is this, then?
About 3 year old.
Wow.
Yeah. Just over three. Before I'd gone to school.
Yeah.
Started off with basic, you know, your Janet and John, C-spot run, C-spot
good place
with
to start.
The ball. But within a year, I was reading, like, Ladybird books that were like Ladybird silver books that you don't usually read until you're at school.
Yeah.
But time I was sort of five, six. Yeah. I remember one particular one called They Were Brave, and it were all about stories of people who were brave, and one of them were Grace Darling, you know, from Lighthouse.
That, oh, right, yeah.
She rode out
she went to save sailors, yeah.
One of them were that, and I remember reading that when I was four.
You're saying you've got a, like, a sponge memory, you'd say, called it, innit? So that's kind of stuck with you for, like, songs and lyrics and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, so
you still I can remember. I can remember singing. I remember, I always would sing along, but until I was like 14, 15, I had no musicality.
Yeah.
I couldn't carry a tune in a bucket.
Right.
But I were enthusiastic and I loved music.
From yeah, yeah. Age. Well, you've got a great voice now, right? I mean, it's amazing.
It just developed.
Yeah.
You know. But I say I was reading voraciously. My nan, being Catholic, wanted me to read Bible, which I did. Asked a load of questions. She couldn't answer them.
Yeah.
And at that point, I thought, I don't believe in that. And that were it. That's when I lost any semblance of faith.
So that young, like, yeah, that's
yeah,
a really young
I just thought,
age, yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And the older I got, the more I was convinced.
Yeah.
But I first got on stage, age 5, at Burley Spar Infant School at Ackenthorpe. It's still there, I think.
Yeah.
And it were in assembly. And we were doing, you know, the story of King Nebuchadnezzar and Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego, and he throws them into fire, casts them into fire, and God saves them, and he calls them out, and he said, and then he becomes a believer. So I did that. I were King Nebuchadnezzar, and I had one line.
Yeah.
But I'd got this big long robe on and a crown on my head, and everybody in school's watching.
Yeah.
And my one line was, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, come out of the fire. I believe in your God. And that were it. And everybody
well
was watching me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, voice was probably a bit lower, a bit lighter then. But I delivered that line. And everybody in hall was just like hanging on me every word.
Yeah.
Never felt a rush like it.
Yeah.
And that were it. I were hooked. From that point, I wanted to be on stage.
You
want to
be
on
stage and the front man, you think?
No, not really. No. Now, at first, when I were a kid growing up and I first started getting into music, it weren't the front men.
Yeah.
It were like bass players, specifically bass players.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing OMD on Top of the Pops, and I saw Andy McCluskey doing his gimpy dancing with his bass, and I thought, I want to do that.
You want to do that, yeah.
But then I developed into singing later on.
Yeah. Well, what we have to do in this show, Sean, is play some music, because sometimes it interrupts, but music is great, isn't it? It's a big part of your life, isn't it?
Absolutely, so massive.
So let's get a song in. So your first choice, I'm a Writer Not a Fighter. Why have you picked this one, Sean?
So growing up, my mum and dad, they liked music, and they'd met in the 60s, and they used to go to Sportsman at Ackenthorpe, where they used to have people like Joe Cocker on and stuff before they were mega, and they didn't have a lot of records, but one of records that were on pretty much all time when in first sort of 4 or 5 years of my life was an album by Gilbert and Sullivan called I'm a Writer Not a Fighter, and this track stuck out for me, and I loved all songs on the album, but this one in particular just grabbed me.
Yeah.
And even to this day, as soon as I hear it, I'm like, yeah. So yeah, that's the one.
Let's play it. I'm a Writer Not a Fighter, Gilbert O'Sullivan.
Now some people like to fight, others don't. And some people like to write, but others won't. Me? I think out of the two, here's the one I wanna do.
If you put me in a ring for a few rounds of boxing, but if you came to birth
or simply for a violent sex. Hey, 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 hey. Oh, you want me, woo, to prove myself. This I can do in a gentle way too, 'cause I'm a writer, not a fighter. I'm a writer, not a fighter. I'm a writer, not a fighter. Mm-hmm, okay, okay. I'm a writer, not a fighter. I'm a writer, not a fighter. I'm a writer, I'm a writer, not a fighter. I'm a writer, not a fighter. I'm a
Gilbert O'Sullivan, that's the choice of Sean Doran, is my guest tonight here on Deserted Island Day. So it's the radio show where we usually have people on from the island of Ireland, now living in South Yorkshire. And it's St. Patrick's Week, isn't it? And I'm still recovering a bit from yesterday. I did do the Irish Triangle. I did them all, Sean. Starting the Grapes.
Yeah.
Dog and Partridge.
Yeah, Fagans.
Fagans. And then Perch was good. Perch is does the big Irish Day celebrations.
I'm not being Perch.
Yeah, it's a nice little pub behind there, but they've got like a tent up there and great musicians playing that. So I did the lot. So I'm not my usual perky self, listeners, today, but you know, Sean's helping me out.
After the day yesterday.
That's it. Well, that's the way it should be, Sean. So, thanks, Sean. So, we're talking about your life so far. We've not got very far in your life, have we, really? So, we're nearly over a quarter of the way through the show. But let's carry on with your, I suppose, teenage years and what life was like there.
Went to senior school at Carter Lodge in Acton-Thorpe, and first year, I hated, because I got picked on. Because I've always been a big unit. I mean, even when I was five, I was 5 foot tall. Yeah. So I've always been head and shoulders above everybody. Then I started putting weight on. So by the time I got to 11, and when I was at school, a big school, I was 5 foot 11, and I was like 15 stone. But I'd never been brought up to be a fighter.
Yeah.
So, in fact, that song really sums me up. I were a writer. I loved creative writing and all that. I were a writer, not a fighter. And the people that picked on me were people that were 5 years older.
Yeah.
And I could hardly turn around and say, pick on somebody your own size, because I were bigger than most of them.
Yeah.
And so that first year I got bullied a lot, and I'd make up excuses not to go to school.
Yeah.
It's
a tough world, isn't it? I mean, especially in the 80s and gone to school.
And it weren't, back then it weren't name calling and you know, like, because there were no online.
Yes.
If somebody wanted to bully you, they had to come round to your house or get you to school.
Yeah.
And they did. And I used to come home black and blue.
Yeah.
But after that, when they all left, the older I got, the less people there were that were that much older. So I still got bullied, but I got bullied by people like my age who knew that I weren't going to fight back. I turned 15, and one day I did. Hit somebody, broke his nose. And that were it. Then I got left alone after that.
Yeah.
But I realised at that point that I've got bloody big hands and I'm a big unit. I can hurt somebody.
Yeah.
And that's
you don't
want
to do that. Yeah.
So I've stayed away from confrontation and fighting most of my life.
Yeah. No.
And I still, the only thing that would make me fight now is if somebody actually physically attacked me or my family.
And I think that's always come across, Sean. I mean, I don't know you well, but I've known you. Well, I've seen you on the stage a lot, and I've seen you at events and stuff. And you always come across as that lover, and a writer, not a fighter.
People.
Yeah, you're always very warm, and
sadly,
big
that
hugs.
That loves dying a bit as I get older.
Yeah, you can have a rant as well, can't you? Some people do annoy you as well.
Yeah, some people will know me for ranting, and I'm not afraid to have a rant.
Yeah.
But yeah, teenagers were good. That's when I wanted to realise I wanted to be a musician. Saw OMD playing in All Again on Top of the Pops and thought, that's what I want to do. And then when I was 14, just after my nan had died, and my granddad had got killed down pit a few years earlier. Yeah. So I stayed with my nan for 6 years until she
passed. Is this
away.
Your Irish nan or not? No.
Well, she was half Irish.
She was
my great grandmother that were Irish.
Yeah.
But But she, as I say, I stayed with her because she, after my granddad had got killed, she fell to bits a little bit, yeah. And she needed somebody around. And I was first born, I was golden boy, I stayed. And then just after she died, I was 14, and I met a kid called Richard Costello.
Yeah.
Again, another one who was Irish background. His great granddad came across in famine. It's a lot. There's a lot of us.
Yeah, yeah, there is
in South Yorkshire that are sort of second and third generation.
Yeah,
and I got assigned to look after him as he went new kid in school.
Yeah,
and he came round to our house that night, and he brought First Big Country album round.
Okay, yeah.
So we listened to that about four times.
Yeah, and
I fell in love with that album.
Yeah, yeah.
That changed my life listening to that because I thought.
That's really turned you on to music, yeah.
Because I've always liked music, but I'd like Two Tone and stuff like that. But when I heard that record, I heard something that I'd never heard in an album before. It weren't just the music, it weren't just the lyrics. It were a feeling,
the energy, and yeah. We better play it, haven't we? Should we do that one? Yeah, Fields of Fire.
Yeah, cracking track this one.
Okay, Fields of Fire by Big Country. Country, Fields of Fire. That's a Sean's choice tonight. Is my guest on Deserted Island Is. So we are looking for more people to come on the show. Originally, it's people from Ireland, but we'll take anyone these days. We're not fussy now. It's just interesting people. That's all we want. So we've got a very interesting man tonight. Hey, Sean, how are you doing? We're nearly halfway through the show.
I'm fine. I'm fine. You know, as I just said, me being me, it started to get me to stop talking, and I love hearing the sound of my own voice. So,
well, as you say, that's perfect for me. I don't want you clamming up on me now. So that's perfect. Thanks, Sean. That was good. So, you obviously did pretty well at school. So you got O levels, as it was.
Yeah,
and at A levels,
I got 11 O levels. I got 4 A levels.
Yeah,
I were always predicted to get top grades, which I didn't.
Yeah,
because at all levels I did. I got A's, B's, and C's. A levels.
Did you start drinking?
Yeah, essentially.
That's a common story.
I started grafting because when I first started doing like paper rounds, when I was about 14. Then when I was 16, I started doing. Collecting rounds for paper shops.
Yeah.
So you go around and collect people's money for the paper.
Yeah.
Then I got a job working with my mum
at
Crosby Kitchens as a cleaner, which is part of the reason that a lot of my best mates are women, because I've always worked around groups of women and been made to feel like one of the girls. So my feminine side were peaked really early.
Yeah.
So I were grafting, and when I weren't grafting, I were going out.
Yeah.
So my studies really took a dip.
And you was in, when you started bands at this point as well?
Yeah, me and Richard Costello, same lad who brought me a Big Country album round. We started our first band. We each had a Casio keyboard. I had one of them little VL1 ones that Trio used on Da Da Da.
Yeah.
And he'd got one that were a bit more sophisticated. It had rhythms on it and you could arpeggiate with chords. We wrote about 4 songs. And we had a drum that we made out of a biscuit tin and a guitar with 4 strings on it. 5 strings on it. It ended up with 4 because I broke one. And we recorded, like I said, 4 songs just in my bedroom. Daft lyrics.
Yeah. And you were writing lyrics, are you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just daft schoolboy stuff.
Yeah.
One about a train. and one about a locomotive, because we're train spotters. One about a locomotive. But because we were 14, 15, and as 15-year-olds are, we were obsessed with girls.
Yeah.
So we wrote this song about how we got on this train pulled by this loco and encountered a beautiful lady and had a romantic liaison. But it was just daft.
Yeah.
We did one about lost love called Oh Laura.
Oh.
We did one that were like a kind of gothic thing, pre-goth, that just went, I'm being followed, being followed. I don't know who and I don't know why.
Well, you still know the lyrics, don't you? Same with your brain.
I was talking about two years ago, St. Patrick's. I were at Grapes and I ran into Richard Costello. We'd not seen each other for a few years. And we got talking. And we were talking about this band, Princess Charles, we called it.
It's a brave name, isn't it, for baiting?
Yeah. I think we were trying to be ironic.
Yeah.
But I bumped into him and he said, we've got talking about it. And he would tell him, and his wife didn't know he'd ever been in a band.
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah, he's the man. He was Tunesmith and I was Wordsmith. And he says, I really don't remember any of them. And I just started singing one of them. And they were like, how do you remember that 40 years later? And I'm like, I can remember stuff that we did well before that. I can remember songs from when I was like 3-4 years old. I can remember songs from throughout time.
Amazing, yeah.
Because,
you're going to give us a blast, Sean. Are you going to give us a blast of Princess Charles?
Princess Charles. So it were, let's think, it was, Oh, Laura, memory as short as your skirt. Oh, Laura, I know that you were a flirt. Oh, Laura, you treated me just like dirt. Oh, Laura, but you were a right piece of skirt. That was chorus. And that took about 5 minutes to write.
Yeah, well, that's tuneful, isn't it?
That's when I started getting a voice, because my voice had broke.
Fantastic.
Up until that point, I had no musical talent whatsoever, but all of a sudden it just blossomed.
So we're running out of time already, I feel. We've got half an hour left, but we need to get so much in. We're still in your school days, aren't we? But you did, anyway, well enough to get to uni, didn't you? You told me you got to Manchester Uni. Was that your first choice uni, or is that where you fancied it?
It was where I wanted to go, to University of Manchester. I originally applied to do chemical engineering, but didn't get my grades, but I really wanted to go to Manchester.
Yeah.
So I got in through clearing to study metallurgy,
right.
Which were you know, just got in through clearing. It were a chance to study in Manchester.
Yeah, so it was like, what was left?
Years, I lasted 2 years, hated course, realised I ought to have been doing something like English or history or politics or something. But I stuck.
So was that like metal? Is it like as it sounds, like the study of metals? Is it?
Yeah,
yeah.
First year you do material science, which is everything, and then you branch off to either do polymer science, material science, or metallurgy. And I did metallurgy. But second year, I'd started following a band, and so my attendance at lectures were pathetic. In fact, Wednesday mornings, I could look out my bedroom window at 11 o'clock. And seat lecture I should have been in when they were testing fire alarm.
Yeah.
I never went.
Yeah.
So I dropped out after my second year. Ran a bar.
We stayed in Manchester for a bit, yeah.
Yeah, I ran all the residence bar for a bit. And
that's
then,
a nice job, isn't it? Yeah.
Great job. But then I got sacked from that. But I was living in Hume at the time. In Hume Crescent.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
So we lived there, which I loved.
Yeah.
Brutalist.
I've heard some stories about that place.
Well, don't get me wrong, it were fruity. There were a lot of punks and skinheads and, you know, yardie gangs, rasters and stuff. But everybody looked out for each other. It was a really, really strong community. And I loved it.
Yeah, no. And they've knocked some down, haven't they, now? But, I know it was, infamous, should we say, in Manchester. But I'm from the other side, but even I knew about that place,
And I loved it. I never had any trouble.
I know a lot of people say that about that.
I used to walk from like Hume to Longsight through Moss Side at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And I never got mugged, I never got threatened, I never got attacked.
Yeah.
You could just do it.
Yeah.
You kept yourself to yourself and you weren't looking for trouble, you wouldn't find it.
Yeah. I think there was a tendency probably a bit later on where the target students as easy targets weren't they? And I think of
but I never looked like an easy target. No, six and a half foot tall, I used to dress all in black or in like army gear.
Yeah, that'll help.
And nobody's going to come up and start having a go at me because they'd be like, well, they'd have to be stupid. You know.
Well, let's play a song from your uni days, eh?
Pink Floyd. First time properly heard this album, Dark Side at Moon, and again, life changing.
Yeah.
Life changing, especially this song. The lyrics on this are just
fantastic. Perfect. Yeah, so it's Brain Damage, Pink Floyd.
The lunatic is on the grass. The lunatic is on the grass. Remembering games and daisy chains and laughs. Got to keep the loonies on the path. The lunatic is in the hall. The lunatics are in my hall. The paper holds their folded faces to the floor. And every day the paper boy brings more. And if the dam breaks open many years too soon, and if there is no room upon the hill, your head explodes with dark foreboding too. I'll see you on the dark side of the moon. The lunatic is in my head. The lunatic is in my head. You raise the blade, you make the change, you rearrange me till I'm sane. You lock the door, throw away the key. There's someone in my head, but it's not me. And if
Genius, isn't it? I loved that album myself. It's fantastic. So that's Sean's choice. Big Sean. You don't mind being called Big Sean. That's your own name.
No, isn't it? I mean, that's how everybody knows me, Big Sean. In fact, that's my stage name for doing comedy. And it sums me up, doesn't it? I mean, if I walk in a room and somebody says, "Where's Big Sean?" and I walk in, "Oh, there's Big Sean."
No, I mean, that's great choice. Well done, thank you for bringing that back to my in my world. Fantastic. So we haven't still got not that far in your life, have we? So you're at uni. You didn't complete the course.
Nah, moved back, worked for a steel firm for 12 years, and then when I walked in on day one, cocky as anything, pony, long hair, ponytail, walked in. I won't be here long.
Yeah,
I'm gonna be a rock star.
Yeah.
12 years later, I left to be a professional singer, and I'll never forget our plant manager at the time, Dave Cusworth, went, "That's longest 6 months I've ever known." Yeah. And by the way, here's a bill for all photocopier paper and pens that you've had offers for your bands.
Yeah.
So I was there for 12 years.
What was you doing? What was the job?
I was a production planner in a steel mill. Right. Which, ironically, considering I dropped out of the metallurgy course,
yeah.
I ended up working in steel. But, and anybody who worked with me at Bedford Steels, Richard Hazelwood, Steve Ragg, Howard Seaman, Dave Cusworth, Kevin Wright, any of them lads, they'll tell you, I was not the best production planner that Bedford's ever had.
Yeah.
I got to that level by one guy being sacked and one guy passing away.
Yeah.
And I didn't really care.
Yeah.
That much about how many bars of core we needed rolling. I was too busy thinking about
music,
and everything.
Yeah.
Just my mind's never been focused in one place. I just about scraped through it.
Yeah.
But when I left there, went straight into being a professional singer. Did that for 5 years.
Is it what band?
That was Sharp Cuts.
Oh yeah.
But by that time, they weren't a rockabilly band anymore. They morphed into like a more of a touring corporate and party band.
Yeah, so you do like, was it weddings and more?
Weddings,
yeah.
Corporate gigs.
Yeah.
All Brannigans. Steve Delaney,
that's it.
And if you've not spoken to Steve Delaney on this show.
I know, I should do, shouldn't I?
You probably should, because he's there's more blarney in him than blarney's
done. He can chat a bit, yeah.
He can. But so when I joined as singer, because one of the bands that I'd been in before, the bass player were in it, and he suggested me. And I spent 5 years on the road with them, and I loved it. It was great fun, but work started to dry up, and so I ended up having to get a day job again, which is when I went to Capita. Spent 3 years at Capita, got made redundant. I were out of work for about 3 months, did some support work that I don't even want to talk about that.
Yeah.
That were hard.
Yeah.
Then I went to Co-op.
Yeah.
Initially working on...
So that's back in Manchester, is that when you were...
Yeah, working on selling funeral plans.
Yeah.
And then that turned me on to wanting to be a funeral director. So after 3 years in Manchester doing that, I came back to Sheffield, worked at John Fairest, and were a funeral director for 5 years.
Yeah.
And eventually that, because I've met...
What made you want to do that? What was you...
Fascinated by it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got took on a visit to Liverpool to a funeral home. And funeral director were amazing, and embalmer were amazing. And I just thought, I need to be doing that. So, and I loved it, but...
What's the job entail then? You kind of just meet families?
You're arranging funerals, and then it's like being a wedding planner.
Yeah.
Wedding planner gets 2 years to plan the best day of somebody's life, and it's got to be perfect, because if that was wrong, that's what they remember. Funeral director gets 2 weeks to plan worst day of somebody's life.
Yeah.
And if out was wrong, that's all they remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pressure. There's a lot of paperwork. There's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes that you've got to sort out.
Yeah.
You know, it's
an illegal, a lot of legal.
Yeah, work. And it's hard, it's physically long hours and hard work, and if you're not mentally strong, yeah, then it can break you, and it broke me.
I know,
and
yeah.
I miss it terribly, because yeah, I loved it, but I know with my history of mental health issues, I'm just not a strong enough person to do that.
Take all that on.
But I have been thinking recently about maybe becoming a funeral celebrant.
Yeah.
Because I can stand up in front of a crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
I can remember stuff.
Yeah.
I can deliver.
Yeah.
And I think that might be something that I'd be really good at.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that, Sean. Yeah, yeah. You've got the empathy there.
Yeah. And then I left there, went to Torshaw for a bit, then Irwin Mitchell's, and then I ended up at Aviva where I am now.
All right.
So it's a checkered history in terms of work. But
job, yeah.
I've never really, you know, there's only a couple of times I've ever really got comfortable in a job.
Yeah.
I always get itchy feet.
Yeah.
I'm always looking for the next challenge and looking for something different, which is perfect because Aviva have been really good with me. They've let me reduce my hours.
Yeah.
So now I've got time to pursue comedy, writing, DJing, podcasting. And that's where I'm at. So my main thing is now back to being an entertainer.
So is that part of being kind of, suppose, all your working life? Like you said, like when you're in the steel place and probably kind of other parts of your working life, you have a paid job because, you know, you need money.
Yeah.
But really, your ambition was to be, you know...
My heart has always been...
Entertaining,
being on stage, creating, writing. A lot of it is because, like I said, my brain won't switch off.
Yeah.
I sleep maybe 3-4 hours a night, and it's been that way since I was in my teens.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I'll compare it to what Toby Foster said, and it's exactly the same. It's like 24 hours a day, you've got a wall in front of you that's television screens all tuned to a different channel.
Yeah.
On this side of you, you've got radio stations, hundreds of radio stations all blaring at the same time. On this side of you, you've got 100 websites all blaring at you. And you're trying to concentrate on them all.
Yeah.
And you can't.
You can't get that focus,
So your brain just winds itself up into a frenzy. And that's it. You don't sleep. And eventually you break down. Because there's only so long your body can take it.
Because you've suffered depression, haven't you, over the
anxiety years, and depression, yeah. And actually, all my life. Started off when I was a kid. But back then, they didn't know what it was. They just said I was a nervous kid.
Yeah.
So they put me on some medicine to calm me down, basically.
Yeah.
Which they took me off quite quickly because it turned me into a zombie.
Yeah.
It turned me into just half asleep all the time, and I didn't want that. I mean, my dad didn't want that.
You've done well to get where you are, I suppose.
Yeah.
Now, all that going on.
My thing has always been for especially men, because there's too many of us taking their lives and dying too early because of depression and pressure that's on us all. But for women as well, but for men in particular, talking about your issues, talking about what's hurting you, because if you talk about it, it helps.
Yeah.
And I tell everybody, talk to somebody. And if you haven't got anybody else to talk to, talk to me, because I'll
listen. I know, you're always open with that, Sean, aren't you?
Things like Andy's Man Club, I'm a big supporter of stuff like that.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I mean... what I do want to talk about, I suppose, is your music career. And I'm sure there's tons of stuff I don't know about what bands you said you had the band when you were 14, but that was just for your bedroom. When was your first band on stage?
First proper band on stage was when I'd just moved back from uni and I joined an heavy metal band called Ravager. Not a great band, but we did covers.
Yeah.
But it was a good introduction to gigging.
Yeah.
And to being out on the road. And then me and bass player left, and we started a cover band with my old mate from Manchester, Frank Birtwistle, and his mate Dave Murray, and Pez's mate, Sean Perry on bass, and his mate, Brummy John. So we started doing covers. We did that for about 18 months. Then Sean left. Rest of us formed this band called 2 Till 10. We got quite a good following. We played at Boardwalk, we played at Alamshire on West Street.
Upstairs,
In old days.
Yeah,
well, we 1 year we played there 38 times.
Right.
Because we'd support anybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we weren't scared. We used to blow people off stage all the time. And,
you're the lead singer. Yeah.
I've always been the lead singer.
Yeah.
Lyricist, front man.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can get away with it, but gobshite. It's basically the good way to describe me.
Yeah.
And I love it. I've always loved it. I've always loved that interaction with audience.
Yeah.
And getting in amongst it and talking to them and making them feel what I'm feeling.
Yeah.
Because everybody will react to a song in a different way, in their own personal way. But if you can get across how it makes you feel,
yeah,
that gives them a starting point, and then they can compare that to how they feel about it. Brilliant. I've always loved that. And
can we talk a bit about the Everleys then? Because that's probably where people know you from. And I mean, you were kind of headlining massive places. You'd play festivals.
Tramlines. We'd play second on a Saturday at Tramlines in front of 30,000 people.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah.
You know, don't get me wrong, I loved the 14 years I was in that band.
Yeah.
I got in it but almost by accident.
Go on, how did that happen then, go on.
So, Pete had started band with Bales as a bit of a laugh. But then he got asked to play at Art in the Gardens. And they said to him, oh, can your band come and play at Art in the Gardens? And he thought, I ain't really got a band. And I can't sing.
Yeah.
But they'd heard me singing at a music quiz at Bungalows and Bears on a Sunday night. And they'd heard I'd been in Sharpcuts. And I got a message from lads that ran 7x7 saying, oh, do you know Pete McKean? I went, I don't know him personally. I said, but I've got his paintings on the wall. I'm a big fan. And he said, well, he's got a ukulele band and he's wondering if you want to join it. I'm like, yeah. Do I have to think about it? So I went and met Pete and Bales and Charlie and realised straight away, you know, first 5 minutes, I was like, it's Pete McKean. And I were in awe because I loved his artwork.
Yeah.
And after 5 minutes, I realised Pete's just a lad like rest on us.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's grown up listening to the same stuff that we have, having the same experiences we have. And from then on, he was just Pete.
Yeah.
Bales was just Bales.
Yeah.
And even when we got like Nick Banks in band, Johnny Wood.
Yeah.
These names that I'd heard passed around in Sheffield folklore.
Drummer from Pulpenny.
And Johnny Wood were in Sharpcuts early doors, and he's been in all sorts of bands.
Amazing musician.
Fantastic double bass player. So when they joined band,
I'd
already gone through this whole, like, not being starstruck.
Yeah.
Toby had joined band, Toby Foster.
Well, they were lucky to be in a band. I mean, at that point when Nick joined, you were already massive, weren't you?
That just added an extra element.
Yeah.
It changed everything. Getting Johnny and Nick in and having that rhythm section to make it fuller and bigger.
Yeah.
That's when we really could go out and play in stadiums.
That's when
we could go out and play at festivals.
Yeah.
Because at that point we'd gone to a point where we got 28,000 followers on Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, there's some mainstream bands that don't have that.
Yeah. So you must have, you were involved in the songwriting for that as well, yeah.
I wrote all lyrics.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's what you're saying. Kitchen in Baton.
for 13 out of them 14 years, I wrote all lyrics.
Yeah.
Not saying that nobody else contributed, because they did. They'd give me titles or lines or bits that they liked, and I'd work around them.
Yeah.
So it were always a collaboration.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
the majority of lyric writing I did. When I started being ill again, towards not long before I left, Pete started taking over and started writing lyrics.
Yeah,
he does his lyric writing in a different way to me. Mine comes straight off the top of my head.
Yeah,
and spontaneous, just whatever's in there. Pete's more thoughtful about his lyric writing.
Yeah,
so he'll take some time and spend time writing it. Obviously, they've got Kieran in singing now. They're still doing loads of gigs.
Yeah, yeah.
Still doing loads of videos. Still got a following. And I'm chuffed to bits for them. Because
he plays for them, of course.
I can't hate them.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I spent 14 years in one of the best bands I've ever been in, and probably one of the most popular bands that's come out of Sheffield since, such as Pulp and Arctic Monkeys.
Yeah, amazing.
So, you know, I don't regret a day of it. I needed to leave when I did because I was burning out.
Yeah.
And it weren't good for me anymore.
No, it was best for you at that point.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We are definitely running out of time. I want to play your last song, which is a long one. We'll talk about that in a second. But one of the great things that came out of being in the Everly was meeting your wife, wasn't it?
So Janine.
Yeah, Janine. So yeah. We'll give her a quick mention. How was that?
Yeah, love to Janine. You know, she's my absolute rock. When we met, we were just friends. And somebody once asked us, not long after we got married, were it love at first sight? And she turned to him and went, no. and I just laughed. And she said, and she felt very awkward. And she said, look, when I first met Sean, I didn't fancy him. But the longer I get to know him, I realised how much I loved him because of who he is.
Yeah.
It didn't matter what he looked like. And that's it. And she's been, she's kept me going through everything.
Yeah.
I love her to bits. And yeah, she knows
great.
That.
She's great, yeah. Oh, well done. Yeah, well, let's what I want to round up is like where people can see you, what you're up to now. So if you're just going to give us just tell us what you're up to these days, so where people might see you.
If you look on Facebook, and there is going to be a website soon, and there's also Instagram, look up Big Sean Experience, or look up Big Sean Pro Gobshite, or look up Three Men and a Bit of Gravy Podcast. And I'm going to be around any one of them.
Yeah.
I do a comedy club at Fat Cat once a month, last Thursday month. Next one's next Thursday. Still tickets available. Again, check it out online. So wegottickets.com. I'm doing lots of comedy gigs up and down country.
You're doing stand-up, aren't you?
Yeah, so from amazing. Middlesbrough.
That's brave, isn't it? That's hard, isn't it?
I love it. Yeah. Love it. Absolutely brilliant. But from Middlesbrough north to, you know, Dunmow and Dunstable in south.
Yeah.
I've played Bicester, I've played Milton Keynes, also at Bedford. I'm doing a lot of that. And I'm taking on two new nights to run, one in Gainsborough and one in Sheffield.
Okay, what side of the Sheffield one do people come to?
The Sheffield one is on 31st of May, the first one, and that's at Aberdale Tap and Snap.
Okay.
I'm running that on behalf of a company called Sit Down for Stand Up. And then I'm doing one in Gainsborough at the Beckett's on 25th of April. But as I say, everything's online. Just look up Big Sean Experience. And
it sounds like you're very busy, Sean, which is good. And you've got, so lots going in, lots and lots.
I'll not stop Ben till my toes turn up.
good, keep going. Well, let's just talk about, you said there's a bit of a story by your final song.
When I was 17 and I were working as a cleaner with my mum at Crosby Kitchens, this were in charts and it were on every day on radio. And I loved it. I just thought it was such a great song. And then when I was in Manchester, my first proper love, the first person, you know, the girl who made me a man, shall we say, she was American. And she was playing this album while we were chatting and getting to know each other.
I was glad you said chatting, yeah.
Yeah. And so this was the song that we're playing when we started kissing.
Yeah.
And everything started getting a bit hey, lads, hey. And so for that reason alone, it's my favourite song of all time.
Yeah.
It's long, but we might not get it all in, but hey, it doesn't matter. You'll get the idea.
You get the idea. Go on, so it's Camouflage by Stan Ridgway.
Yeah,
right, let's play it. Thanks, Sean.
No worries.
Appeared there at my shoulder and said, wait. When he came in close beside me, said, "Don't worry, son, I'm here. If Charlie wants to tangle now, he'll have to dodge." I said, "Well, thanks a lot." I told him my name and asked him his, and he said, "The boys just call me Camouflage." Through the brush and all around our ears, it was then I saw this big marine light a fire in his eye, and it was strange, but suddenly I forgot my fear. Side by side we took our battle stance, and I wondered how the bullets missed this man, 'cause they seemed to go right through him, just as if he wasn't there. And the morning we both took a chance and ran, and it was near the riverbank when the ambush came on top of us, and I thought it was the end and we were had. Then a bullet with my name on it through a bush, and that big marine, he just swatted with his hand, just like it was a fly. When I turned around, he was pulling a big palm tree right up out of the ground and swatting those Charlies with it from near the kingdom come. When he led me out of danger, I saw my camp and waved goodbye. He just winked at me from the jungle and then was gone. And when I got back to my HQ, I told him about my night and the battle I'd spent with a big marine named Camouflage. When I said his name, the soldier gulped, and a medic took my arm and led me to a green tent on the right. He said, "You may be telling true, boy, but this here is Camouflage, and he's been right here since he passed away last night. In fact, he's been here all week long. But before he went, he said, 'Semper Fi,' and said his only wish was to save a young marine caught in a barrage. So here, take his dog tag, son. I know he wants you to have it now." And we both said a prayer for a big marine named Camouflage. Whoa, Camouflage, things are never